Hey guys, and welcome to episode 93 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now in this episode, I've got Kimberly Quinlan back on. I got her on last week to talk about radical acceptance, and if you haven't checked it out, I encourage you to do so because it was a brilliant interview, in my opinion, and I'm not talking about my interview ability, I'm talking about Kimberly's answers. But in this episode, we talk about eating disorders. Now it's worth me clarifying, we talk about eating disorders with OCD, so that's having OCD and a kind of comorbidity, which is like a side disorder, which is eating disorder, could be bulimia, anorexia, etc. And also we talk about OCD affecting eating habits. So I just wanted to make that distinction, but we cover both angles. So people with both eating disorder and OCD, and people where OCD affects their eating. So whether you have an eating disorder or not, I think you're going to get a lot out of this episode, because we also talk generally about OCD, compassion, acceptance, etc. So hopefully this is helpful for you. Let's get into it. And here is Kimberly Quinlan. On today's show, I have Kimberly Quinlan. Kimberly is a licensed marriage and family therapist who treats people with OCD and related disorders, eating disorders, and body-focused repetitive disorders. She runs her own podcast called Your Anxiety Toolkit. Kimberly also trained at the OCD Center of Los Angeles and later became the clinical director. And today we'll be talking about eating disorders, so from two angles. So those people with OCD and an eating disorder, so two separate diagnoses, and also when OCD affects eating and it becomes somewhat a disorder in itself. Yeah, welcome back to the show for the third time.
Thank you.
Cool. We literally recorded our second interview about 5 minutes ago, so but this will be spaced a week apart. So I know eating disorders are one of your special areas of training and interest. So very simply, you know, what is an eating disorder? What types of eating disorders are there?
Right. So first I'll make the differentiation between OCD and an eating disorder, because that's often the most difficult part. An eating disorder is often a fear related to your body, and you're an attempt to, you know, change something about your body. It's often related to body dysmorphic disorder. Mm-hmm. But what happens and how this plays out in terms of behaviors is there's often a large degree of restriction because of this preoccupation with your body. There could also be some purging, right, which is the case for bulimia. Yep. Right, bulimia nervosa. If you're restricting, it's anorexia nervosa. There can also be a binge purge cycle, which is more related to binge eating. Right. The ones that line up more along the OCD side and where they often meet together is a specific disorder which isn't in the DSM. It's not a diagnosis, but is called orthorexia. Which is where it's basically contamination OCD, excuse me, but with food, so that you're afraid you'll become contaminated through the food that you eat. And then the last one that does tend to line up with OCD in many cases, which is ARFID, which is avoidant restrictive food intake disorder. And then there's, you know, just miscellaneous eating disorder, which is basically that it doesn't line up with any of the criteria for the ones I've listed.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, thank you for going into that. I've got a question here is why specialize, obviously you focus on OCD as well largely, but why also specialize in eating disorders? What's your kind of interest in that field?
Well, it's what I had experienced myself at a young adult. And when I went into my training with OCD, what I quickly found, because I loved treating anxiety disorders, what I quickly found was there are very few people who can do both. Or not that they can't, but they're not trained in both, or they don't have experience in both. And I'm in Los Angeles, and there are lots and lots of eating disorder specialists in Los Angeles, and there are a good amount of OCD specialists, but not a huge amount of them do both. And the hard thing about when a sufferer has both is they play off of each other. So if they're seeing an OCD specialist, their compulsions go down, usually there'll be a rise in their eating disordered behavior. And so if you reduce the eating disorder behavior, their compulsive behavior, it's like playing whack-a-mole. I find it's incredibly challenging work, but incredibly rewarding because you have to get your creative hat on and really keep an eye on the whack-a-mole experience of, you know, one popping up and one going down.
Yeah. No, that's yes. And that's interesting. How often do you see it as kind of a comorbidity? And is it often that an eating disorder is kind of what you would consider the primary diagnosis, or is OCD more often the primary diagnosis and eating disorder is kind of secondary? Or is they kind of level?
Yeah, it really depends on the client. Some people will start off with, you know, a preoccupation with their body or a part of their body, which is very typical for eating disorder. And then they do some type of, you know, behavior. We could look at it through like OCD and that there's a fear, and then they do a compulsive restriction or purge or binge. It could start there. And then a part of that control aspect is that they start to control it in an OCD way, which would be now we're measuring things, and you can only eat things with certain numbers, and that's where OCD can kind of glom on. Or it could be quite the opposite, and someone starts primary with an OCD diagnosis around numbers and symmetry, or it could be, you know, it could be even around scrupulosity related to what food they eat, and then it kind of turns into, you know, because of all this preoccupation with the body, there's now a fear about losing control of their body or losing control of their body weight, and then the eating disorder gloms on to the side. So it could go either way. Like I said, except for the orthorexia piece, we really consider them to be equal in importance, because orthorexia does tend to present itself not in the fear of being overweight or losing, you know, control of their weight, but more just around the contamination and the health of their food.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you know, at the time of this recording right now, as I said before recording this, eating disorders are not a strong area of mine. I haven't studied it enough yet, and hopefully I will this coming year. And hopefully this podcast is a huge step in my understanding. How would you treat an eating disorder? So forgetting OCD for a second, is there a common treatment for it?
Well, with if someone had an eating disorder and didn't have OCD, there are several excellent modalities that are really successful. I mean, of course, CBT is, you know, probably the most common known and the most successfully researched. You know, I had some training in narrative therapy, which is so great for eating disorders. You know, you could do family focus, which is called the Maudsley method, which is really family focused therapy, which is also incredibly important. So this is where I'm like, I would say, I'm really open to whatever works for the client, depending on what shows up. Because with eating disorders, you know, it can, different to OCD, or not, maybe not so different, but just in the case that it does present often with more than just an eating disorder. There often is family stuff or trauma or some emotional regulation happening. Not always, but, you know, with OCD, we don't spend time analyzing your childhood, or, you know, that's not helpful. But with eating disorders, it really can be, because it's important, particularly in the Western world, that we pull apart societal beliefs on what our body should look like, and we pull apart how we experience our body as a young teen. There's so many components there that are important to touch on. But when I'm treating a coexisting eating disorder and OCD, I actually have found it to be very successful to use exposure and response prevention. because you know, you can imagine if you had OCD and an eating disorder and your therapist is saying, okay, let's do some exposures for your OCD and then now let's look at your childhood. And I mean, that would be very overwhelming and confusing, and you would leave the session going, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And so unless you had a way of really separating those, how I treat the coexisting disorders is that we look at the hierarchy. What is your most feared food? What is your least feared food or event, whether it be wearing tight clothes, loose clothes, swimsuit to the beach? What are the things that you're avoiding? And we gradually make our way up the hierarchy using exposure and response prevention, which is, you know, now we have a lot more science to back that. Mm. And it's, you know, very well understood to be a very helpful modality.
Yeah. And do you do more, I guess, because obviously you do this for OCD as well, but more so with the eating disorder, obviously you can't go into necessarily family history and all this because it might conflict with the OCD. But do you do more of the cognitive piece? So like looking at the beliefs around body image and stuff like this?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, my background, I tend to focus more on a mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, which is, as much as it is about correcting faulty thinking, it's about learning to observe faulty thinking, which is, for me, that's just, I think, my preference, but I find it to be really successful to take that approach. But absolutely, it's going deep into the construct of mostly through what society has told us, you know, our body should look like and often about when we feel as teens, and I think everyone can probably resonate with this, whether you've had an eating disorder or not, as a child or a teen, you feel very out of control with your world, right? Yeah. And often controlling your eating is your only way to feel in control. And so it's talking about the hard moments of not having control as a developing teen or as a middle schooler who's being bullied or, you know, a child where there might be some family or trauma dynamic. These are really important cognitive components of therapy.
Yeah. Okay, great. I got a bit of echo then. Okay, so going through my questions. So you've answered quite a lot. So going, you know, you just talked about mindfulness-based CBT, and we did an episode just now around radical acceptance. And if anyone's listened to this, I encourage them to go listen to that episode. It was very good, if I don't say so. How can you apply radical acceptance to OCD and an eating disorder together, or if it helps just to focus on the eating disorder?
Right. Well, I mean, ultimately, particularly if we were to focus on the eating disorder, it is about an intentional letting go, right? It's surrendering not only to the body in which you reside,
yeah,
right, but surrendering to and accepting the outer scary world, right? And so a huge part of it is about, like we talked about, radically accepting what is. Now, when I hate to be biased, but for people who have OCD and an eating disorder, I'm not saying that it's easier for just to have one, but when you do have two, it feels incredibly painful to this idea of letting go. And you know, it's a really difficult because there's fear coming in from so many angles. And so that's where, you know, we do talk about like taking smaller steps and more calculated risks, quote unquote risks, yeah, with eating disorders. And similar to what Michelle Kraft talks about in her research is really testing the belief system. Okay, you think that eating, you know, I have a pile of food in my drawers, and I'll say to a client, what do you think would happen if you ate this granola bar? Okay, let's test that. Let's test if you ate this granola bar, would something bad happen to your mom? that's a common one with coexisting OCD and eating disorders, is if I eat this, well, therefore some bad chain of events will happen, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's test that out. Let's be a little bit courageous and test that out in my office in a controlled environment. So you're ultimately, through exposure, you're accepting the thought and the possibility of that happening. A huge part of eating disorders is radical acceptance.
Yeah. Okay. I want to talk a bit more about when kind of an eating disorder is hugely part of the OCD. So it's not, they wouldn't necessarily get, they being the person with, they wouldn't necessarily get an eating disorder diagnosis. They would more so get an OCD diagnosis, but it's focused, the obsessions are around eating. And I guess, would orthorexia fit under that category of, it would be more of an OCD diagnosis if it was one? Because you said it currently isn't in the DSM.
Right.
I guess, what's my question here? How do you deal with, say, orthorexia? Or are fed, is it more exposure work, or is it mixed with the cognitive piece as well as the exposure together?
No, I personally, I think every therapist is different, but I would take a behavioral approach. So with orthorexia, for those who aren't familiar, it typically looks like that first they start to reduce fats and sugars, just like a normal, you know, dieter would do, or a healthy person would do. I'm going to cut back on some gluten. And then they go to move to, well, now I'm going to cut out carbs completely. No beans for me, no cheese, no dairy foods. And it's slowly the person's food intake gets smaller and smaller to where they're now malnourished, right? Because we all want to eat well. I always get criticism when I talk about orthorexia, because people say, why do you therapists have to make everything a disorder? And I'm like, well, no, this is for people who are severely malnourished because of their fear of being contaminated. And so with orthorexia, we use an exposure and response model where we would expose them gradually, again, similar to, like I just said, with the Michelle Crass form of, like, let's just test it. Let's see if you were to have a piece of cheese, what would happen, you know? And then you do the exposure and you willingly accept the outcome. So with orthorexia, that's what that looks like. With ARFID, with the acronym of ARFID, it often is related to the experience of disgust. You know, we talk about disgust OCD is, you know, I look at that burger. It's not that I'm afraid that burger will hurt my parents or that I'll get sick. It's just that I have an experience of disgust when I see that.
Yeah.
Right. And lucky for them, or unlucky for them, it's exposure therapy again. So it's exposing them to the experience of disgust, or it could be some other sensory experience that they have, you know, nausea, or just the feeling of, it doesn't feel right, which we know is common with OCD. So with those, we expose them to the feeling and have them tolerate their discomfort and practice non-judgment about their discomfort. And usually they have success as long as they continue to maintain the behavior.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. So my questions aren't making sense to me today. Okay, so let's get a list of the questions. So Jen, and I've literally copied and pasted it. So Jen said, OCD has often focused on the idea that any food or new substance could cause an anaphylactic reaction, which at times has led me to stop eating and lose considerable amounts of weight. Just any advice for dealing with that? And what if I could bring in a story actually that kind of might support what Jen's saying here is, when I went to China in 2015 with my mum, I took her there and we were as part of a tour. So we ate with all these other people on the tour quite a bit. And there's this one woman who had an anaphylactic reaction to, I believe it was pineapple or something, and like her throat started closing up. You know, she was really on the verge of dying. Like, you could see she wasn't getting enough oxygen in. I'm laughing because it's a painful experience, like reliving it. And literally the rest of that trip, I was anxious. I was scared to eat anything in case that happened to me, even though I had never had an anaphylactic reaction. And this woman had had it quite a few times in her life, and she traveled all the way to China and didn't bring her bloody EpiPen, which is the adrenaline, right?
Right.
Which to me, angered me, because I was like, how could you be so reckless and careless of your health? But it was also, I was angry because I'm now feeling this anxiety that I didn't want on holiday. But luckily my mum was there, she's a nurse, and there was another paramedic there, and they, with several things, they managed to just about calm her down, and she was fine. But side note, she never apologized, which bothered me as well. I'm still bitter, as you can tell. But I can see how, although it never became a problem for me, like long term, for a few weeks and actually months after that, there was my wife started cooking with an Indian, it's not an Indian vegetable, it's a vegetable used in Indian cooking, and I was anxious that this thing was going to give me an anaphylaxis, so I rubbed it on my skin as well to see if I'd get a reaction and all this, and when I ate it I was anxious, and now it doesn't bother me because I've eaten it several times and I haven't had this fear since, so I must have got over it. But I can see how if it's really strong for someone, it would seriously limit what they eat. So I guess, yeah, how do you kind of deal with that?
Right. So, I mean, the thought is no different to any other OCD, right? The content is still what if A, B, and C happens and causes X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And so we treat the thought the same, right? We still are going to use a mindfulness approach and be an observer. And we're always going to expose you. Yeah. Right. And this is where people get caught up. And even I think sometimes therapists get caught up because they feel like because they had a thought about it, that the risk must be high. It's like, well, you know, it's the same with driving exposures. Well, what if I have a panic attack on the road? Well, that could happen and it actually could cause an accident, but I'm still going to make the client drive and I'm going to get in the car with them.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to take the risk. We're all going to tolerate the uncertainty and do those exposures together. And so, no, the exposure for those, like for this Jen, I think it was, yeah, who's afraid of having this strong allergic reaction is, unless there's an actual evidence that, you know, you've had the allergy test and you're certain, your job is to do an exposure, no different to, you know, me exposing myself to a child if I had a pedophile OCD, or me, you know, being around a gun if I had harm OCD or whatnot. It's, again, you can't get caught up in the content. You know, but this is my, you know, often clients will say, but it's my life. Why would you risk my life? I'm like, well, I'm not risking your life. Where I'm going to have you tolerate the thought about risking your life.
Yeah.
Right? People get really caught up in that content, you know, and so this, always, in terms of treatment, we always look at medical before psychological, right? Like if they're medically at risk, we have to address that first. And so I will often have clients first, you know, get a dietitian or a nutritionist, get their weight back and their nutrition level back as best as they can, even if it's still through avoidance of the feared food.
Yeah.
Right? And then whether that be, you know, having a nutritional supplement or whatever, you know, protein shakes or whatever, because health has always got to be the most important. And then, you know, as you do that and you're getting medical care, then go through your regular exposure. I mean, you recovered because you, whether you meant to or not, you kept the exposures coming. Right. You either you said, I have no choice, I have to eat this, or you said, I'm going to willingly eat this. You did the appropriate exposure. But for this fear, yeah, I mean, if what I would do if this was within my sessions, I would maybe even try some scripting around, I have an anaphylactic shock and I'm so embarrassed in front of everyone and I pee my pants and you know, I throw up everywhere. Whatever your big fear is, you know, I die. whatever, you know, I spend years on life support, whatever your fear is, to really work on those scripting and scripts there. And then sometimes that can help to sort of gradually, you know, get a little bit of habituation happening before you start actually exposing yourself to food. But that would be the normal treatment method. But it actually brings up another, not an OCD symptom, but a phobia, which is the fear of vomiting. And a lot of my clients who have emetophobia, yeah, will, which is a really, really common phobia, will come in malnourished because, you know, if you're afraid of vomiting, an easy way to solve that, or a compulsive way to solve that, is to not eat. Yeah. You can't throw up if you haven't eaten. And unfortunately, the result is, you know, malnourishment. So the same thing happens. We expose them to their fear. And, you know, I have a bin here ready if you throw up. That might happen. We have to accept the uncertainty.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Good. Yeah, it's, I guess the answer is there's no easy way out. You got to do the work.
You do. Yeah. You do. Yeah. Again, if that's all very rooted in just anxiety disorders. Yeah. But again, if the fear is, I'll be fat, and, you know, it's more eating disorder related, or, you know, I'll lose control of this part of my body, the treatment, even then, will still be similar. It's just that we have to sort of be very gentle around whatever relational issues might be, okay, you know, co-occurring.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And then Megan wants to know, how your relationship with food changes after recovery. So I'm not sure if she's talking from a eating disorder point of view or from like an OCD type orthorexia type deal. Mm-hmm. So basically, how the relationship with food changes after recovery. And she's put specifically regarding hunger being a reminder of the anxiety, if that makes sense.
Okay. Right. So let me just make sure I think I understand the question. Is saying that hunger reminds her that she's nervous or sometimes, so
yeah,
can you help me?
I mean, I'm trying to, she did say, if that makes sense, and I should have gone back and clarified with her, so it's completely my fault, Megan. But I've heard this before, people talking about for them, anxiety and hunger feel very similar.
Right.
Not for me. I somewhat understand, but I don't specifically feel anxiety that way. But I have heard some people say, you know, when they're really hungry, it feels exactly the same.
Right.
Could you ask how your relationship with food changes after recovery?
Right. Yeah. So I think I understand, but I'll, number one is, it's interesting, and I've never thought of it this way until I heard this question, is so much of mindfulness is about building a better relationship with your thoughts, right? And that's the practice we do with eating disorders, which is building a better relationship with food. We don't use food as a way to avoid our feelings, right? We don't use food as a way to experience our feelings, right? Like, I'm so angry at my dad right now, crunch, crunch, crunch on the chips, right? It's very sort of symbolic how we can, you know, eat our emotions, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's taking away the way that food is my form of coping, right? Mm-hmm. And I absolutely, you know, if I can be an example, it's possible to have a very healthy relationship with food after recovery. And it's a beautiful place to be when you can, as it is when you're not afraid of your fear so much with OCD. I agree with you in terms of that there can be sort of these associations with hunger being, it feels like anxiety. And often I talk with clients about, one of the big pieces of psychoeducation I give clients is, if you haven't eaten, your body will experience that as anxiety. Think about it. When we haven't eaten, we're shaky. We feel a little lightheaded. Our stomach is sort of working hard to get whatever nutrients that's left over. That sounds a lot like anxiety and panic.
Yeah.
Right? And so there often is that association. I'm very much, I think I still have that association myself, is if I haven't eaten, I start to have thoughts like something bad's going to happen, yeah. You know? And then I'm like, wait, what? And I'm like, oh, hang on, I haven't eaten. I'm undernourished here a little bit. I'm having a sugar low. So I think that there's absolutely that relationship. Some people are the opposite, and that hunger, particularly people with eating disorders, when they're hungry, they haven't got anxiety because they feel like they've won. Mm. They feel like they've won the control fight. But if they're full, that means they've given in and they're less worthy now and they're bad now. There's a lot of self-deprecation around not eating means I'm winning and I'm in control and no one can hurt me now. But if you're well fed, you're vulnerable.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. And so that association, the flip can be true in terms of like hunger can actually feel empowering. And that's not so true with the OCD types, but very much true for eating disorders.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I hope that answers her question. But to answer her main question, yes, you can absolutely have a wonderful relationship with food and use food for what it's for, which is nourishment and celebration, right? We live in a society yeah. where food is number one to keep us alive and well, and number two is to bring us together as communities. With an eating disorder or a coexisting OCD, it is quite the opposite. It takes you into isolation. You feel like you can't eat in front of people or, you know, in uncontrolled settings.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And I like the bit about, yeah, changing your belief around what food is. For me now, I have done for several years now, I've looked at food as almost like a performance fuel. Like I want to enjoy the taste of it, but also like I know that if I put the right clean fuel, so to speak, in my body, I'm going to perform better. My energy levels are going to remain fairly high and good. I'm not going to like dip after a sugar low or whatever if I've eaten loads of chocolate, and also longevity of life. I'm going to live longer and healthier because I put this good fuel into my body, and not same as if you put diesel into a petrol car, you're going to ruin it,
right?
Or gas, I should say, for my
right non-European. but if you have OCD or eating disorder, it's hard because yeah. you know, here's an example. I've had teens who go to school and then they have health class, yeah. and that teacher sits up the front and he says, yeah, you should eat whole foods, and here's the food pyramid, and which is now called the food plate, and you should exercise this amount of times per day or week. And for every other kid in the class, they go, yeah, 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 I'll eat the best I can and be the best I can. For the person with an eating disorder or with a coexisting OCD, they go, I have to be like that
yeah.
all the time. And they take it very literally, and that becomes the hard and fast rule.
Yeah.
And now, you know, as you and I have discussed in the past, they're attached to that outcome, and anything that doesn't line up with that outcome is a massive source of anxiety. Right? Like if
yeah.
a teen client comes into me and tells me they had this in health class, and I put my head down on the table and I'm like, no, like this is... You're not supposed to take it literally. It's yeah. a guideline.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's balanced the same
life.
As, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so a big part of the work I have to do is, yeah, just like you said, we want to live as healthy, but you're still going to have a birthday cake.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Yeah, and you'll celebrate your you know, Christmas or, you know, Hanukkah or whatever you celebrate. You'll celebrate that around food, yeah. that it, and that's the hard part, is you can't take it too literally. You can't take any rules too literally when it comes to these types of disorders.
Yeah, absolutely. And I these healthy eating classes are often there just to stop you eating fast food 10 times a day.
Right.
Because that's too far in the wrong direction then.
Right.
But then obviously fast food occasionally is perfectly fine. It's not really going right. to do any damage or anything. Okay, so next question is from Jude. And so Jude's talking now about She said, should patients with severe weight loss due to OCD be treated in recovery the same way as patients with anorexia? And I think she went on to talk about kind of before you do treatment or exposure, should you focus on getting their weight back up before you even start the kind of therapy? If that makes sense.
I think it depends on the person, but you know, if we were to talk ethics, yes, yeah. Ethically, any therapist has to look at, again, if we were to sort of triage, we always look at medical first, right? Because, yeah. You know, if a client's bleeding, I'm not going to do exposure therapy, right? And if a client is severely malnourished and their organs are highly taxed, I'm not going to, you know, sit at a Chinese buffet and make them eat everything. That would be shock. To their system. So whether it's an eating disorder or not, we're going to look at it from the same perspective. Mm. It's important from then on to be diagnosed correctly, right? Like only a few days ago, I was talking with a colleague where it's so clearly OCD, but this client keeps getting put in an eating disorder facility because they're underweight. That's not going to help that client. You know, that's not the specific treatment that they're going to need. So it's important then to clarify, is the fear around weight and body size and shape, or is it about a feared consequence similar to what we see in OCD? Yeah. But no, you're always going to look. And in terms of when to start ERP or when to start the psychological therapy, I think immediately you start psychological therapy, but the rate in which we do exposure depends on their medical situation. Yeah. Most of the time in outpatient, clients are somewhat malnourished but not medically dire. And so we're good. But if somebody is, you know, having massive heart rate and blood pressure issues and multiple mini heart attacks, which happens a lot when someone has been malnourished for many, many, many years, their organs start to shut down. So exposure therapy is going to be lower on the priority until we get them medically, you know, regulated. So that's a broad question answer, I know, but I think it really does depend on the person.
And absolutely. Anyone in that situation is hopefully going to be with a doctor who will make that decision for them or with them, I should say. Okay, cool. No, it's good to understand. And then, okay, so I got a question from Instagram and the name wasn't attached on the handle, so apologies. But basically she said, my eating disorder is ARFED, which we talked about earlier. And she makes a bit of progress, but it feels like I'll never really break through and it will hold me back forever. And she says she's not sure how she can overcome it. And I spoke with her on Instagram. She hasn't yet seen a therapist. And I said about seeing a specialist, but it makes sense if this isn't even... Oh, no, it's ARFED's a diagnosis, isn't it? It's orthorexia that isn't in the DSM. Right. So I believe she is going to go see a therapist. And I guess that kind of would answer her question when the therapist speaks of her. But is there anything else to add?
No, I think it's great that she's been already given that diagnosis. I mean... this is a newer diagnosis, right? The ARFID one. And, you know, it's so great because up until now, none of the descriptors in the diagnosis would meet the criteria for someone who has these types of symptoms. Like I said, like, you know, sensory issues with food, you know, like I don't like squishiness of that, or, you know, there's no other way, you know, to sort of give a specific diagnosis. But as long as she's correctly diagnosed, then as long as you're getting a treatment provider that knows what she's doing, that's actually really wonderful, because so many people don't get properly diagnosed. The same with OCD, right? You can go 7 years with getting the wrong diagnosis if you know, in bad cases. But my advice to her is get your team together. I would give this advice to any of the questions. Get your support team together. get rid of anyone who's not supportive of your treatment or your move. Educate people, and this is very true for all the cases too, educate people that it's not okay for them to comment on your body, right? It's not okay. Other people don't have permission to say you've gained weight, you've lost weight, what happened to your arms, whatever, you know, because that ends up just feeling shame.
Yeah.
Right. But no, good for her. She's going to find a therapist. She's set.
Cool. Absolutely. And then I wanted to add a question towards the end, which is around compassion and self-compassion. And I could be taking a leap here, but I feel that having more self-compassion would help with an eating disorder. Is that fair to say?
I love that leap. I think it's, as we talked about with radical self-acceptance, and these are like core mindfulness skills that we have to practice. But I am a huge believer in self-compassion being sort of I can't think of the word. We would call it in Australia the roundup, like the fertilizer for therapy.
Yeah.
It speeds up the process. a roundup actually I think is cancerous now. So let's not use that. But it is the fertilizer of treatment. I think if you can apply self-compassion, you're basically speeding up and you're allowing yourself to be held in a place where you can improve. Very rarely do people improve coming from a place of, self-criticism. You're working against yourself, right? And I'll often pull people out and say, that criticism, you're not getting any closer to your goal by doing that. Some of it is intrusive and we can't control it, but let's actually even it out by really heavy emphasizing the compassion. So absolutely, I think that's a good leap for you to make.
Sure.
You know me, hand on my heart. I'm going to be super gentle. How can I support myself and find a support team? You can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there anything else that I haven't asked you? And obviously it's a fairly new area for me, so I'm sure there's plenty I've missed. Is there anything else you wanted to say on the podcast?
Unless we went into each disorder, which I think is going to be too detailed for what's happening, I think that's the main point. I think that if you're the main point I would say is if you have OCD and a coexisting disorder, that you should be fully set with your ERP therapist as long as they're trained in the eating disorder area. Be careful of, I think the main thing is different to OCD is be very careful of what society is telling you should be.
Yeah.
Get very curious and inquire onto your belief systems about how you think our bodies should look. I posted on Facebook, this is just my favorite thing, just the other day, someone on Instagram had posted rules for your body. Just be your body, you win, congratulations. I haven't correctly quoted it, but I was like, that is it. It's like, your body is just the way it is. That's all it's supposed to be. You win, congratulations. I love that so much. It's just about, full body acceptance.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we talked about the end of the last episode was about kind of loving yourself wholeheartedly and giving yourself permission to love yourself, and I guess that comes into body image, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing I would say is if you're struggling with body image, there's a huge movement on social media right now called body positivity. If you hashtag body positivity as like a search, you're going to be overwhelmed with the incredible amount of awesome humans who are sending out vibes that you can be in whatever body you want to be and rock it.
Yep.
And I think that's a really powerful message that I just love.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. Cool. Yeah. No, thank you again for coming on and talking about this area. I know it's going to help a lot of people. Hopefully talking about both OCD and eating disorders together is something that hasn't happened maybe as much as it should. So hopefully this can help. So yeah, thank you for your time.
No, it's my pleasure.